hey, folks, I'm traveling this month, and I don't want to leave you high and dry without a podcast episode to listen to. So I went back through the archives of 142 episodes and pulled up a few of my favorites to share with you again. This talk is with Martin Philip from September 2018, if you can believe it, way back when the world was a different place entirely. We have a great talk, talking about accessibility and privilege and open source baking and making progress with the craft and just reveling in what an awesome guy and what a thoughtful person Martin is. So enjoy the talk. Martin Philip from King Arthur Flower from a few years ago.
How crazy it seems to have a dream to open and run a bakery, but they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up podcast. This is Mark Dick. I'm your host. I'm very glad that you're listening to the show today. I think we've got a really exciting episode ahead, because my guest this week is Martin Philip, the head baker from King Arthur Flour in Vermont, also the cookbook author. He wrote an amazing book that's half memoir, half recipes, all incredibly entertaining, and the recipes look amazing as well. And we talk quite a bit about the book writing process and why he wrote the book and when he decided to write the book, that kind of a thing. Martin's just an awesome guy. I always thought of him from a distance, if you will, as a very thoughtful guy. And he really is. This is, I felt like, I was talking with a real philosopher of bread and of baking and of culture, on the chat today. And it was a lot of fun. It was one of those where, I had to try and remember my duty to all of you to have a good interview, because, we could have just gabbed and talked and I could have listened to him all day. In fact, as you'll find early on, I actually was so mesmerized by the conversation that I messed up the recording in the first minute, but I've patched it back together with only one break, and I'm sorry about that. But it's well worth getting through my fumbling to hear what Martin has to say. So I hope you like the show. I loved it. This is one of my all-time favorite episodes so far, although I have to say I'm shaking my head a little bit at how, when I'm almost two seasons into this, you know, almost 26 episodes into this, and I can still make the most fundamental of recording mistakes. So maybe that's never going to change. Maybe that's just the way I am. But a lesson to all of you, if any of you are listening and are, you know, aspiring bakers, aspiring bakery owners, and you know, are worried about messing up in public, take it from me. Everyone does it. It happens to everyone. You've seen it here, not every week, but often enough to know that there's no way you're going to screw up more than I do. So don't hide behind perfection. Perfection is a terrible, terrible disease. So if I had to be perfect, I'd never get a chance to talk to Martin Philip. So there you go. So let's get right into the show today. I'll blather on and tell you stories more next week, but I'm really excited about this talk. So let's get into it.
No, it's quiet here, except for we have four new chicks, and so they're constantly scratching and peeping, and we get them outside.
Oh man, that's really cool. So do you live in the country then?
No, we live in town, but in town in Vermont is like, our town probably has 5,000 people, you know. Vermont is the second most rural state in the country. And so we have a lot of, you know, access to the outdoors, or, you know, we moved here from New York City about 12 years ago. but my wife and I had both grown up in more rural environments. And so we spent probably, I guess we got out of college in 92. And we went and lived in the Bay Area until about 2000. And then we were in Manhattan from 2000, 2006. And so it was like, I don't know what that makes it, maybe 14 years all told of like urban living. And I think that was enough for both of us.
Hey folks, I got to apologize, busting in here. I glitched out for about a minute in the talk with Martin. We were talking about where he was from in Vermont and what it was like living in a small community, and then switched over to talking about how the community in Vermont really supports that good kind of crusty bread that he loves to bake, and how where I lived in Regina, you had to really train folks to kind of embrace that bread because they were so conditioned to the squishy white stuff. And here's him responding to that.
No, you have to absolutely train them. It's this because it's funny, right? A town of 1,500 people, you think, well, how many loaves of bread does it take to feed 1,500 people bread every week, you know? So if you do the math, it's a decent amount of bread. But it's like the bigger barrier, or the biggest barrier maybe, is not can you make enough bread or can you make enough high-quality bread? It's can you align yourself with a population of people that sees bread as a value, you know? So it's almost like this, I always say, like breaducation. It's like the breaducation piece, where we have to explain or educate or illuminate or renew this relationship that has existed and should exist again between the farmer, the miller, the baker, and the eater. You know, it's all about like renewing that chain, that exchange. But it's hard, you know, it's hard when we have, we're fighting against this educational cultural piece. So hopefully we'll get ourselves in line with that. I know things are getting better. I don't think they're getting worse. But I'm in a bubble here in, you know, Vermont, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and when we were at that seminar, with Mel and Stephen Jones, and you were talking about, I remember you asked a question about how to bring all of this really cool, you know, single variety heritage grain stuff kind of down to the regular folks, right? Because right now it's such a just by the supply situation and that it's such a niche product. It's such a specialized product, you know, almost an elite product, if you'd say, right? You know,
it just, is.
With the price that you have to charge and stuff, that, you know, it's for me, it's really encouraging that we're even able to do this now, you know, that we're able to make these kind of breads and promote this type of flour and grains, but you're dead on. We're just at that those initial stages. And now the real work starts to try and spread, you know, cast that net wider of who we can serve with all of this, you know?
No, I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like we're at the precipice of serving a population which can afford the bread.
Yeah.
We haven't even begun to look at the population which has both a cultural barrier and a barrier of access.
Yeah.
Right? A barrier of economic access to this food. And it's not just an issue with bread. It's an issue with moving from, you know, high quality meats, high quality cheeses, good vegetables.
Oh yeah.
Instead of using cheap, you know, packaged and processed foods. So
yeah, absolutely.
You got some work to do.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So yeah, it's a fine line between that optimism and, you go around one more time and then all of a sudden everybody's shoulders are sagging and, oh geez, we got a lot of work to do.
Yep.
For sure. So congratulations.
But
on
one day, you know, one day at a time. I mean, I think the key is like one day at a time, one loaf at a time. You know, it's just like being a baker, you know, and trying to improve. One loaf at a time, one bake at a time, one idea at a time, trying to find a way that you can price bread or sell day old or do some sort of outreach where we're slowly raising the level of what we do and increasing access, you know, across society.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen overnight, but bit by bit.
Well, hey, and you know, I'll tell you one more story. Like, I really think that it's that people do recognize it when they have access to it, even if it's something that's not normally in their diet or in their ability to buy. Because we've had some different activism and protests and stuff going on in the city, and because I'm in support of some of this when I can, I'm baking off extra bread and taking it and, you know, giving it to these guys that are camped out and protesting and stuff. And they are absolutely loving it, you know, and these are folks that, you know, it's not like they'd ever be able to come in and buy the bread when I had my bakery, but it's certainly in that tiny little experience, it's not a lack of desire for it, for sure. Like, you know, when I come, they are the happiest folks ever. And I know other people are bringing them other supplies and stuff, but it's like, oh man, the good stuff is here. Right. Yeah. You know? And so that's encouraging to me as well to say that it's not, you know, it's not that people aren't receptive to it. It's, sure. it's just trying to figure out the system. So as that, it's plain and simple, it's affordable. You know, across, to more people. So,
yeah, it's affordable, and it's also, it needs to be sold where their food is sold.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes and that's something else to figure out, I suppose. But I think so much of, I mean, we sell in some local co-ops, but I know that there's a whole part of the population that doesn't see those food co-ops, even though they do a great job. I think there's a big portion of the population that feels outside of that system or maybe even uncomfortable walking into that store, you know, or maybe it's a Whole Foods. How do I even navigate this Whole Foods? They don't have the brands that I'm used to seeing. The prices seem inaccessible. You know, it's like,
oh yeah. No, I hear you for sure. For sure. So congratulations on the book. I have to, so I've been through it, but I'm trying to forget it. So I don't, say, well, in chapter one, you said, and this kind of thing, but I really enjoyed it. And, I wanted to ask you, so what was the inspiration to write it? Was it coming from you, or was someone sort of beating on you to write this thing? Or
you're
quite the storyteller as well as a heck of a baker.
Well, I don't know, you know, people had for years come to me and said, hey, Jeffrey wrote a book, and I had grown into being Jeffrey's, like, I would say right hand. I was writing the baker. So people were coming to me and saying, hey, are you going to write a book? And I kept saying, no, I don't have anything to write about. I feel like if someone needs to read a good book about bread, I tell them to go read Jeff's book, you know?
That's right.
And then read everything else too, because it, you know, you don't learn everything from, it's not one-stop shopping with craft, you know, it's learn some, practice, bake, you know, it's not a straight line. So I didn't feel like I really had anything to say. But then I was trying to be chosen for the U.S. Coupe team,
right,
as the one bread baker. And as part of that process, I prepared some materials that included, like, very high quality pictures that were taken by Julia Reed. And then I did a little bit of writing for it. And I did a little bit of just doodling, like illustrations. Mm-hmm. And then we bound it. And it came out, and it was pretty. And I had a couple different friends say, hey, I would buy that book. Like, if you would sell that book, I would buy it. What? That's crazy. So I showed the book, or what I had, these little things. I showed them to my friend, whose name is Jody Pico, who's a big writer in the US, like New York Times bestseller.
Sure. Yeah,
and Jody said, Jody said, oh, these are beautiful. You know, I don't know what these tables are. She was looking at the Excel, because it was all Excel in the book for the baking formula. She was like, I don't know what the hell that is, but these pictures are really pretty. And she said, and so we met, and then it was just kind of over. But then, like, within an hour or two, and Jody is like one of the most generous people on the earth. And she, I got an email where Jody CC'd her agent, and she said, you know, it was an introduction. And then I sent the agent some materials, and then we had a meeting, and like within 2 weeks we were in New York and I had a book deal.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. But the thing was, is that I didn't know what I was going to write. I didn't have any clue.
Yep.
They wanted a bread book. They wanted some sort of like meditation on craft, but that was about as formulated as it was. Right. And so I said, okay, I've got a deal, and I need to write like 25 to 35,000 words. I know how many pictures we need, blah, 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 but I don't know what I'm going to write it about. And so, I have another friend who's an author, and I said, hey, would you be willing to read my stuff? Because she'd also taught English and stuff. And I hadn't written, I'd had like 2 writing classes in my life.
Right.
And I said, would you be willing to read my stuff? I'm going to try and write a book and blah, blah, blah. And she said, yeah, absolutely. And I said, so where do I begin? I don't really know what the book's about. And she was sort of laughing. And so she said, well, just start writing. And so I just sat down and started writing. And probably like maybe an hour into it at best, I realized that what I wanted to do was sort of trace this out and back form of like, you begin in a place, you leave, and you're sort of transformed, and then you try and return. You know, it's like the oldest story that we all know.
Right on.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be original for a second, and then I realized.
That's why it works. Like I've done a lot of reading on, you know, sort of that hero's journey and those old myths and stuff, and it's. I think that's why it grabbed me so much when I read it, is because it's the arc is recognizable, but the story is completely unique, you know, like my goodness, like, you know, from, to apply that to, you know, to a bread guy who did not start out as a bread guy by a long shot. Like there's a bit of magic there. Yeah. Well, and I see, and now I am doing it, but I loved how you laid the recipes out that said, okay, it's, you know, chronological as opposed to by topic. I thought was unique, but also really, really worked, because when you're talking about, you know, drop cornbread biscuits, it's like, boom, there's the recipe, right? It was, And then you put the percentages in. So right away, that's +7 for me. Cause so I'm not trying to convert cups.
I insisted on grams. I insisted on baker's percentages. And then I said, and they said, well, you know, this book has to be sort of open arms. It has to be, you know, bakers of all skills need to be able to use it. And I said, all right, I don't mind putting the volumetric, but I want it to say approximate.
Yeah.
I really believe that. And I had used, Jackie Pfeiffer, who is, the Frenchman who teaches at, the French Pastry School in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
And Sebastian. Sebastian is an MOF, and, Jackie has a book. I think it's called, I'm going to screw it up, but I think it's like The Art of, I forget what it is, but you can look it up and find it. And Jackie had approximate in the volumetric column. And I said, okay, that's super bright, because I didn't want to field questions where someone was saying, I made your recipe and it bombed. And then And I have still gotten those, but usually, and actually I think the one time that I got that, I did say, okay, let's go back to the beginning and let's talk about temperatures and let's talk about measurements, because measurements are what ensure that we maintain ratios in the dough environment, right?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
The ratios are all important. You know, if you use the scale, I think I say in the book, like the cups and teaspoons are like the cubit of baking, you know, like distance from your middle finger to your nose. Well, you know, that might have worked to build a road, but if someone's putting a new toilet in your house, you know, or if you got some new construction, I want to see a tape measure, you know, yeah. I want to see accuracy. And so I felt like I needed to put that sort of disclaimer in there and say, just, you know, the best way to begin is to begin with accuracy. And I think there's even a sidebar about the scale, but yeah. So, and I felt like, you know, having those recipes in the arc of the story, it felt the most, it felt organic to me. And it also felt, I don't know, in a way it justified their inclusion. You know, it felt like we're moving through this story and that's actually, it's all as it happened, you know?
Yeah.
Those are things that I saw in Italy or enjoyed in Italy, or those are memories that I have from my childhood of my grandmother's things, you know, or my mother's bread. And so it's good. And I feel like you could write that same book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everyone has that same story. We all have food memories. We have those experiences. And I feel like, in a way, I hoped that it would become an endorsement for people to sort of bake their own narrative, you know?
Yeah.
Get the skills and then bake your own narrative, you know? Share those things that you grew up with in, you know, Saskatchewan, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. That's beautiful. With me, I would always write a newsletter for my customers with the bakery, right? And I've got a few guys that are, because I still do it with my backyard bakery, and I've got a few guys that are saying, you know, can you just kind of compile all of these for me? Because I just want the collection, you know, because and I imagine it's the same thing, because whether I planned it or not, and well, no, I didn't plan it. It does describe a bit of a journey, right? You know, crazy guys when they opened, and you know what it was like in the middle and at the end and stuff. So no, that's cool. I've got a friend that's kind of bugging me in the same way. So maybe we're onto something, but
you should do it. Yeah. You should do it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It can feel like, I think that I've been kicking around this idea of like open source bakery, you know? I really feel like that's where we need to be. And I would love to see it happen at King Arthur. We're talking about it. I think that in a company like ours, I think there's a need to also provide some support. If you put that resource out there, I think they feel an obligation to support it. Whereas if it were just me by myself, I would put it out there and say, these are recipes that I know work in production.
Yeah.
This isn't a how-to, it's a what is, you know?
Yeah.
This is our current state. And I feel like recipes to me are not that useful. It's the devil is in the details, as you know, the application, the process and all of that. So I would love to see ourselves, or maybe someone else will jump on it first, just put those recipes out and say, this is what we're doing. And I think that could only raise all boats, you know?
No, for sure. For sure. Because it's, I know you've talked about this a lot on with the guild, is that, you take four bakers side by side baking the same thing, you're going to get four different results as well. Right. And it's, and that's part of the beauty of it. Like that's really is. And, you know, I could, I've got my spreadsheet with the 60 or 70 different formulas in there. Right. And I have to say, like, that I've collected over the years, right. You know, it's, you know, this one came from Jeffrey's book, and,
or this one came from SFBI, or this one came from Craig or Tracy and or Solve, and then you're tweaking it and making it your own, just so it, well, it's like, here's the structure, and now you're tweaking it to make it your own and fit what's in your mind, but also in your space and with your ingredients and with your temperatures and with your climate and all of that stuff, right? And so you know, there's not a single one in there that hasn't had a tweak, but the lineage is there. You know, like it's very apparent. You know, and it's not something you hide. It's like, yeah, this was inspired by something Didier taught me or whatever. You know,
yeah. But then you add your artful interpretation or execution of it. You know? Like you said, your space, your hands, your relative humidity, the development you get from your mixer, the shape of your leavens or your flowers. So that's the art. That's where the art is, you know?
Oh yeah.
Ratios are just ratios of the roadmap that will get you to the address or the county. Maybe they don't get you all the way to the exact house, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. So I'm still figuring out how to get to this. I guess I'd like, what I'd love to ask you more about or get you to talk more about is sort of how you got into baking, because I know that it's not how you started, right? Your degree was in, like, what were you, were studying arts, weren't you?
Yeah. I went to conservatory for classical music. So I worked as a singing opera and concert, stuff, you know,
right.
Baritone doing, you know, baritone things. Moved to New York City to pursue that career. And, my wife's also a singer.
Right.
And there just wasn't enough, there for both of us to do it. And I think also I think I felt like one of us needed to make sure that we had food on the table and that we had health insurance. We wanted to start a family. And so I took this sort of detour into investment banking and, you know, the land of good benefits and, you know, bills.
And in some hero's journey, that's the whirlpool that they have to fight to get out of, for sure.
Exactly. The sirens are up there singing and trying to avoid the rocks. But I think that, you know, that was a good detour in that it provided perspective on who I am and what I need to get down the road intact, you know, to sort of arrive in a healthy way. And so, I lasted for a while, and then I think realized with the help of lots of things, among them like 9/11. I think 9/11 was a defining moment for a lot of us. I think each generation has those things which are wake-up calls or in a way like measuring sticks. I think that's the word I usually use. It's like, or the way I describe it is like sort of a measuring stick. You hold up next to yourself and you say, is this, are you who you want to be in the life that you want to live? And I feel like for myself and, also my wife, I think we were like, we're not quite there. And so I started just looking around. I went to, I tried art school to see if that would stick. And, but I found that it didn't quite stick. But I had always had this relationship with food especially, but also with bread making. From when I was a child. And, I had a couple experiences that like got me back in touch with bread making. And I just, I have a tendency to be able to obsess.
Yeah.
And so, I started baking a lot and, just became this sort of like beast of a home baker, not unlike many of the people who are on the Guild Forum or following Maurizio on the Perfect Loaf or contributing on the Fresh Loaf or just baking really seriously as an amateur like MC Farine. So I think there are a lot of examples of people for whom bread making is a tool, and I don't think that bread making is the lowest common denominator. I think the bread is the tool to get to some deeper connection with our hands, our handwork, this older thing. I think there's something older that we're trying to find, this sort of tangible source of creativity within ourselves. And maybe even more than creativity, it's this sort of, for me, it's this flow state in a way. It's a state of consciousness where passion is there, concentration is there. And so bread became that tool. And so I tried to get hired to King Arthur because I had been up there and I had a class with Jeffrey, and I said, okay, this is where I need to be. Both the culture is good. I think that Jeff was more than anybody else that I had access to. I think Jeff was the person that I wanted to learn from. Right. And, you know, and the values of King Arthur were well aligned with what I wanted and location too. Yeah. And so I bugged him and kept bugging him. It took 3 times to get hired.
Wow.
And eventually was able to make that transition from someone who was passionate about bread as a home baker, but, and I felt like I knew the I knew a lot of the science. I had read a lot of books, but I hadn't, you know, like many home bakers or serious home bakers, I hadn't gained the hand skills because I just couldn't get the reps. You know what I mean?
Yes.
No matter how much bread you give away, no matter how many loaves you make on the weekend, it's like, no, I need to shape more than 20. I need to shape like 50 a day or 100 a day or whatever it was. And then, so eventually I got hired and got my chance to shape a lot of bread and clean dirty machinery and sweep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, all that good stuff. No, well, no, you're exact. Like that's so true. The repetition really, well, it's critical in a way. Like it's just so helpful. And, yeah, well, and the opportunity to work side by side with someone that's teaching you over a long period like that is amazing. To say I'm self-taught is a complete and total lie, but I did most of my reps alone, you know, or most of my reps in my own place, just because of time of life. You know, at the age the kids were at the time, it was just not feasible to go travel and that kind of thing. But, every moment with another baker and another bakery was just so precious during that journey, you know. It was like, so my arc was more like do it by myself and then a small correction as I meet up with somebody, and then, you know, keep doing it by myself and then go off to another thing and another, you know, maybe a big correction, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
I think that's a great, like, I think, you know, obviously there are a lot of ways to get there, and I don't think there's not a destination to which one can arrive. I really don't feel like that. I feel like I'm on the road. You're on the road. Someone who's just beginning, they're on the road too. We're all on the same road, you know. We're trying to make more beautiful, more flavorful bread with access and all of those things. But it's funny. I think it can be really interesting to see someone or to work with someone like yourself who has evolved in a way in your own environment. It's almost like you're an undiscovered tribe or something, you know.
yeah. this strange hybrid of all these influences.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
no, it is for sure, you know. And what I love about it is you've got this kind of code when you go into a new place, and it's like I was up helping Tracy last summer when she was short staffed, and you know, the first thing is we're shaping baguettes, and I lean over to the guy beside me and it's like, okay, are you a seam up place or a seam down place, right? And you know, and that's only something that's you know, if you haven't shaped a lot of baguettes, you don't know what I'm talking about, but if you have, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? And it's like, and it's that and it's like, yeah, no, we're seam up. It's like, okay, and away we go. And I love that. I love that that kind of the code
that you've got. That's not a secret code, but it's a learned code for sure.
Yeah. You know, what's funny about us is we change by season and by baker. So every day when you come in, you know, if you're just up to the bench, if I walk through the door at 6 o'clock, say, they've divided baguettes by 5:30, 5:40. And, we're, you know, pulling boards off and shaping baguettes, and either I can look and see, or I turn to the baker, because the baker is the person who always gets to decide what they want. Like the downstream person, the person at the oven who has to manage those rising pieces of dough, they get to have the choice. So it's like, you know, like you said, seam up, seam down, what's the scoop, you know? It's like, they may even say, oh, you know, yesterday I went seam down. It's super humid. I had trouble getting the skin dried out without taking the rack cover off and putting it in the walk-in for a second. So let's go seam up. And I think the couche should dry. You know what I mean? It's that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That daily calculus that makes it, that I think is, you know, it's, these are things that I feel like every trade must have those things. But because I don't know other trades, I can't identify them. But I assume, like, I find those things so interesting. So if I were a physician or something, maybe, you know, maybe the nurse is walking out of the exam room, they've taken a blood pressure, and maybe they pick up on a trait. And as they sort of high five the doctor in the hallway, it's like, you know, seam up or seam down. Well, it's seam down.
Yeah.
They must have some parlance or something.
Yeah. Oh, for me, it's gotta be electricians. Because whenever I try and do wire my own sockets or something that, you know, seems to take me an hour to do. And then you watch these guys come in and they can do a whole house in that same hour. And they've got moves. I would run all the wire outside the wall because I'm too intimidated to fish it through, and they can do it in like 3 minutes. And I never understand that. But yeah.
So. Well, you're lucky to have, you know, I think you're lucky to have that relationship, even if it's singular. I'm sure it's not singular because I'm sure you have other talents, but it's like, it's nice to, I feel like because you have that depth of knowledge and experience and that empirical knowledge and that relationship that you have with Brett, I feel like now you can take that and you can leverage that. And I feel like that in a way is kind of what I did with bread making. Was I took this relationship that I had with music that was daily, that required work, so it requires work, it requires risk, it requires passion, it requires diligence and accuracy and all of these things. And so then when I feel like when I moved over to bread baking, it was like, oh, I know this toolbox. Like, I know how to do this work every day, take it seriously, be passionate about it. And then you can, you know, I feel like it gives you a leg up and insight.
Yeah. Well, for sure. And well, and you know, that's probably a really good comparison between music and the craft of baking, because you've got, you know, when you're practicing and you're singing every day, you know, you're going to have days that are better than others, you know, and you're going to have and it's like, well, I'll get it tomorrow. You know, and that was a big lesson to learn for me, coming from, you know, the sort of corporate world where for some absurd reason you're supposed to be on and correct at all times, to this idea of, you know, the rye did not work the way it should today. We're gonna get it tomorrow. We're gonna, you know, try one thing, because if I try three things, I'll never know which one was the one that worked. Yeah. But, you know, and having that, I learned the patience over a long period of time, especially as we started to have other bakers. And so now it's a team doing it. To learn the patience of, you know, it's not going to be all perfect every day. And that was part of the fun. And then you start to love the troubleshooting side of things. As much as the when everything works, you know, but that was definitely a skill that I could, that I know that I had to learn, that idea of, you know, it's coming every day. And, and my wife, Cindy, who is also in the bakery, the other one she always got me was, there's no correlation between how good the bread is today and who's going to come and buy it. So, you know, this idea of, you know, it's the best day, you know, man, everything's perfect today does not necessarily mean the till's full at the end of the day. That's just the way it is. And you better learn to accept that as well.
It's true. And I think, you know, we look for those days where everything is in alignment, but I haven't seen one yet.
No, for sure. I don't know what I would do the next day if that ever happened.
You know, I think your point is apt too, because we see degrees of gray. We see shades of gray.
I think,
whereas so many consumers see fewer shades of gray, or they see black and white, you know. Yeah. So when they walk up to and I talk to bakers about this sometimes, because inevitably you have you know, you have a half deck of batard that don't open as well as they could, and the baker's looking at them like, if I were to grade this, I would say D-, and I don't want my customers eating a D-.
Yeah.
I look at it and I say, hold on. Let's put ourselves in the consumer's shoes for just a minute. And there will be that consumer that says, I noticed something, but I couldn't tell you what it is. But most consumers cannot delineate between a bread that has a big open ear and one that didn't open as well, you know?
Right.
So it's almost like, and in a way, I think that it's important to remember that we're able to think about those things because of the access that we have to food, which is a privilege, right?
Yeah,
so we're able to think about and sort of micromanage those concerns around, did it get an ear or not? Because we're not worrying about, are we starving or not? Yeah. And so I feel like, in a way, we have to respect the food and the food chain by not holding those loaves aside and saying, oh, the bread's not good enough today. No, the bread is good enough today. It's edible. We're in an honorable position in that we can some days say, this bread isn't on point. We know that tomorrow it'll be better, but it's important not to just use aesthetics and our own sort of self-importance always when judging whether or not something's fit for sale. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. For sure. The last couple of months I've been working on, well, ever since Wheatstock, I've been working with more whole grain loaves, more heritage grains. So around here, I've got a miller that can get me Kamut and can get me red Fife flour and that kind of thing. So I've been playing with that and struggling with volume, you know, for the first several weeks, as you do, right? Until you finally get the timing of your Levans right and your proof times right, and just, you know, respect how fragile those grains are. And but the way I work now, it's all pre-ordered, right? So if I'm making Fife loaves, people have ordered them, they're coming to the garage to pick up, and now I have these loaves that, to my eye, are a disaster, you know. And it took a lot of work to say, because I would the first time I said, well, these are a disaster, and I'd give them away and say, take them, like they'll taste fine. And I want you to enjoy the taste of this, you know, but they're not what I like. And I would get emails back saying, no, these taste great. Like, keep them coming, you know? And then some folks are being nice. Not, like, I like the fact that they're a little more dense, or whatever, you know, they always passed the edible, you know? So there'd be like your D-, like you said. And then it took me a long time to finally get over that a bit and say, okay, we're on a journey together for more volume here. And so, if you're up for that journey, order one and, you know, come to the garage and we'll see what we get. Right. And we're getting there and it's getting better all the time. And again, other folks have helped me out, you know, just in conversation to help me understand what they taught me at Wheatstock, which is the funniest thing, because, you know, it's just so much information overload, and just that thing about, you know, yeah, no, with these, you know, build your Levan like 3 hours before and seed it heavily and, you know, let it really grow quick and then build. Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. You know, and I'm still trying to hold things overnight, and it's like, I just didn't write that part down. And so, you know, it was a big mental block, you know, and what I realized is I'm not doing anybody any favors by taking myself too seriously or holding the bread back or anything like that. It just doesn't work. And you know, in that whole period of a couple of months where, you know, I'm making some test loaves and that every week, I think I had one person, I think there was only one person that came back and said, you know, yeah, it really wasn't all that great, was it? You know, like that kind of thing. And the rest, it's like, no, folks are fine. They know what they're getting into. So, you know, so it's, yeah, I always find that when I remind myself that, especially with these, the new things that we're doing, that, you know, we're on a bit of a journey together, and I'm really lucky because I have customers who are also friends that, you know, so I don't even like calling them customers, but it's like, they've got my back as well. They're happy that they can get the bread. It's a very, you know, symbiotic relationship there. So,
yeah. You know,
so it's that I'm in a really nice place that way, but it's a learning for sure. You know,
it is. And I think I get it. You know, we all want to make, we want baguettes with perfect cuts, and we want levain with a nice open structure and a high percentage of whole grain. I mean, we want all these things. And I think it's easy at times with that level of sort of attention to detail and micro focus to forget that our primary role is as provider, right?
Yeah.
I feel like our primary role is provider. It's not someone who judges aesthetics, because you can't eat aesthetics, you know. Yeah. It's important to frame, I think, our worry about it.
Well, and as a provider of food, the best thing you can do is take this home and cut it up right away and eat it. You know, so that, like, you know, they're not taking pictures of the stuff. They're eating it. You know, so you know, so tell me about that great tapenade you put on it or whatever, right? So yeah, it's No, that's very true. That's very true. So, I'm curious about King Arthur flour and not so much the flour, but the baking center, because I've heard a lot about it, and I know that you guys put out a series of videos on YouTube back when Jeffrey was still there. It was you and Jeffrey and doing these things. I know I've watched them about 15 times. Because I just think it's fun. Like, I just think it's a lot of fun the way that you
guys
did it.
It's amazing, right?
But those what's the...
Those things have millions of views.
Yeah.
Those videos have millions of views now.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
five
crazy,
but... videos. Just five videos. And then there was the one-off that we did about baguettes. But it was just like, I think that part of that, and I want to get to your question, but I think part of why those were so successful was because they came out at a time that preceded our omnipresent ability to document, because now we all have an iPhone and we can do Facebook Live, or we can do a Snapchat about baguettes. We can put a shaping video on Instagram. It's like the access to media is omnipresent now. Whereas at that point, and I include myself even, we were so starving for information, especially visual information, because I was never someone who could learn to braid from sketches, because it's like I needed to see what happens in that gap between when the strand goes here and the strand goes there. I needed to see that movement. It was like I needed to learn in that way. And so seeing the shaping, seeing Jeffrey's shape, seeing the speed at which cuts are made on the baguette, or how to load, or whatever it was, you know, I felt like that information was so valuable. And you wouldn't believe how many people have come up to me and said, oh, you know, those videos were like, I learned how to make bread from those videos, you know? So.
Oh yeah. No. And it's true. You know, the thing that struck me watching them though, other than, you know, the joy of watching you guys work was the joy of watch the little segments, the little transition segments, when it was watching you all work in the bakery. You know, with the music in the background and that, and getting this, I got a sense of just how much production you guys do there. Like you're putting out a lot of bread every day. And so where does it all go? Like it's
yeah.
Because so when I went to SFBI to learn, you know, and they were just begging us, please take everything you make home every day because we don't have a place for it. You know, at the end of the week, the sisters will come and they'll take it for charity. But so what market are you serving with all that production?
Yeah. So our team there has grown to close to 20 bakers now. And from the point, I think we made those videos in, I don't know, maybe 2009 or 10, something like that. And since that point, the bakery has more than doubled in terms of sales. So we have like a 12-mile delivery route that services this population area, this area where we live. We call it the Upper Valley. And we have a retail store. And so we have, so the bakery proper was designed as something that wouldn't sort of feed off the larger organism, but which would be self-sustaining. And so from day one, we made efforts to sustain ourselves via sales and via, you know, efficient baking. And we continue to do that. We have a large retail store, and we, you know, 4 to 5 bakers will do 600 or 700 kilos of production a day. And that's just bread. And then we have pastries, cake work, the whole thing. It's full, sort of full service. And we bring returns back from, you know, we have accounts that we take returns from. And for those, bread either goes to, you know, food bank type organizations, charitable organizations. If it doesn't go there, then it goes to pig farmers. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't go there, it goes to compost. So Vermont in, I think, 2019 will have some pretty firm rules in place around we won't be landfilling any compostable product. So right, food will not go in the landfill. And so we're conscious of that and do a lot of composting. And so that's like our retail production bakery. And then there is also there a baking education center, which offers classes every day that we're open of the year. Uh-huh. From, you know, half day classes and, you know, for kids up to 5-day professional classes that are most often taught by someone like Jeffrey. I do a little bit of teaching, but mostly I'm in the bakery, you know, trying to make the best bread we can every day and keep everybody engaged and happy.
Yeah. No, for sure. No, that's really neat. I like I say, I didn't have a sense of just the amount of production that you're doing out of there. My mental image was more the education center than the production shop, but it's that sounds amazing. You know, really really neat setup.
It's good. You know, I feel like on almost any given day, if someone comes in, if a baker comes into me and says, "Hey, I've been thinking about a baguette. Let's make up something. Like, I want to make a baguette with 15% toasted locally sourced corn flour in it." Yeah. And let's do it en bloc. So retarded fermentation, blah, blah, blah. Almost any day of the year, I will say yes to that. And we will run tests. Like, we have such a culture of support. And that was, I think that's coming out of Jeffrey, you know, Jeffrey, eternally curious. I think that if any of us can be anything, that would be a good thing to be, like, eternally curious, especially as craftspeople. I think curious about the intersection of ingredients and fermentation, hand shaping, and hot ovens. You know, it's like, if we can remain curious about that and inspired, and I feel like Jeffrey's example, someone who has decades and decades of baking, still, like, he's retired now, but he comes in, and what do we talk about? Talk about bread. You know what I mean? Talk about, hey, you know, he was saying, oh man, I got an email from someone and they're making this einkorn bread and this is coming from overseas and here's the technique. And I said, oh man, I've got some einkorn flour. I'll send you home with a bag and then you tell me how it goes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we never run out of appetite for that. And I think that was one of Jeffrey's great gifts to us, was to foster and support an environment where we can test and innovate and create on a daily basis, because that, I think, makes our work environment dynamic and interesting. And I feel like if I should lose appetite for that, it's time to hang it up, you know, because
yeah.
why? What's the yeah. point? We're not yeah. engaged in that way, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the, it's a craft with really infinite permutations, right? Which is like, it's boundless, which is, it's boundless, yet there are rules, which is so cool. yeah. You know? Yeah. Like, that, you know, and, you know, and then you add that it's a living thing and well, you got me, right? Like that's, I always say like, whenever there's yeast involved, now I'm really interested.
yeah. Chaos is on board. And I think, you know, Calvel said the proof comes out of the oven. And I like to think of it like that. I also think the feedback comes out of the oven too, you know, what worked and what didn't.
Yeah, for sure. Oh man. Yeah. Well, and Jeffrey's seems to be the busiest, quote, retired fella I've ever met as well. So, which is awesome, I love that.
When he left, we had a little party for him and I wrote something short and I was just saying like, what is the evolution or what is the etymology of the word retire? And, originally the word which came into use, I forget exactly when, but it hasn't been in use that long. The word meant, it comes from the French and it was basically like what they would holler when, you know, if you're at war, it was, pull back, you know, retire, pull back. And it was like, no, this isn't what I see Jeffrey is doing. You know, it's not in his vocabulary. And when you talk to him now, it's like, oh, I was teaching, you know, out west for 2 weeks and I was at the grain gathering and now I think he might be in Portugal right now. So it's like, he's a great example for all of us in terms of how to remain engaged and curious over the course of many years, you know?
Well, and that's the thing, like, the best teachers that I've ever met are also the ones that they're going in thinking, man, am I ever going to learn a lot this week during this class that I'm teaching, you know? And that's so awesome. Yeah, no, in his book, there's the one line that I've stolen and reused 100 times where he talks about standing on the shoulders of giants. And it really helped me, put into context, even what I'm doing with this show, right? Like it's like, sort of trying to project this thing about like, look, we're all in it together. We're all learning together. I love tracing the lineage of teachers and who have you worked with and who have you learned from, but it's, you know, and then we're taking it for, you know, we're going to take it a little bit further. And what I love about this is that the teachers are just as pushing us just as hard to take it further and then teach them. And it's the coolest thing. And when I go to a thing like Wheatstock and I really see that, you know, all of the quote big names are all hanging around the bench when someone else is teaching a course because they want to see what's going on. I love it. Like it's like nothing I've experienced before, and it's the best thing in the world. It's so cool. And then you all go for a beer after and realize that like we're all just people. And that's when I first got involved, you know, joined the guild and all of that stuff, I hoped for it and didn't really believe it. And there's not been a single thing that's contradicted that view. Like it's just been consistently again and again and again, this spirit of generosity to where now I just say like, you know, bakers are the most generous people I've met because they really are. There hasn't been a single person saying, please don't come visit. You know, it's like, it's so cool. So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, I could talk to you for about the next 3 days, but I know you've got stuff to do, and then I just want to thank you for talking to me today. This has been great, and I want hopefully we'll be able to get together in person soon and hang out and keep the conversation going because this has been a pile of fun.
Yeah, Mark, I appreciate you taking the time to talk and also you know, not just with me, but with others, because this is important stuff. And it's, I think it's core to who we are, like you said, as bakers. And so I appreciate the opportunity to have this and have it accessible to many people, who, some of whom are professional bakers and some of whom are maybe standing on the edge of this cliff and trying to decide if they're going to jump in and give it a go. So I appreciate it.
Right on. Oh, thanks. And thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I think that how you were talking about those videos that you guys did before videos became ubiquitous about baking. And it's, I don't know, I don't want to be too bold about it, but I'd love it if this is sort of, if the videos are sort of showing the how, maybe this show over time can start talking about the why we do what we do, you know, or maybe that's the purpose it serves. Thanks. You've given me a lot to think about today, actually. So I really appreciate that.
Good. Right, well, on. Mark, come see us in Vermont, and I appreciate you taking the time today.
I will. Right on. Thanks. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Good to see you.
Cheers, man.
Bye-bye.
And there you go. Just the best talk. This was like a, you know, that nice morning cup of coffee, you know, sitting on the sunny porch, just talking about life and journeys and the magic, if you will, behind why we do what we do. And Martin's what a smart, thoughtful, meticulous guy he is. I'm just thrilled that I got to talk with him, and doubly thrilled that I got to share the talk with you. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please tell your friends, get them listening to the show. For whatever weird reason, the more people that listen to these episodes and take inspiration from the conversations, the better I feel. And it's one of those weird, mystical, magical, emotional things, but it feels good to know that you're listening to this and that you're enjoying it. So have a great week. Enjoy every step in the baking process this week, and I'll talk to you again soon. Happy baking.